Before we get started, I want to remind you that we are brought to you today by rockauto.com. Their amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Well, great news. The NBA, at least as of now, has a plan to come back and wanted to get John's take on that. We also want to talk some about the teams that will not be joining the league in Orlando and what is next for them. And also just talk about some of the smaller logistical issues, like what these rosters are going to look like, when teams are going to be able to sign guys, stuff along that line. But I talked about this already on Dunked On, John, so I'll give you the floor of just your overall impressions on this restart plan for the NBA, in which 22 teams will be going to Orlando.
Yeah, my biggest concern as I was watching events unfold was that the league was spending so much time on fiddling with these different playoff formats that I felt like it was taking their attention away from the massive logistical challenge they face in actually putting together the rest of the season on the fly in a different location while dealing with this completely new set of circumstances created by COVID-19, and making sure that nothing that happens with that torpedoes the season, which would have massive financial implications for the league. Now, on one hand, you hope that the financial worst case scenario is bad enough that they've indeed taken this seriously. But the worry, and I wrote this in my column in The Athletic, is they talked about it's about the data, not the date. And then at the end, we kind of ended up with a date, and we'll work back and get some data, I guess.
Well, I think what it really became was, number one, they felt like there was enough testing capacity and enough political cover that they could just test everyone every day. Because I think when they originally made that statement, they're hoping that whatever countermeasures were made got the level of transmission low enough in the community that you could just at least have a no fans situation and players could operate somewhat normally within their community and they weren't at risk of getting the virus. Clearly, that is not the case with Correct. The amount of transmission that we have. And so they had to really audible and come up with a plan that would work regardless of how much community transmission there was, essentially. And so I think when they made that statement, that the nature of the plan had to and did change.
Yeah. And to be clear, I mean, they're still figuring some of this out in part because it's a complex negotiation, both with the owners and with the Players Association, over how many teams do you bring back? How much money are you trying to make up? How many games do you play? The rules on going in and out of this quote-unquote bubble environment in Orlando, all that has to be negotiated with the Players Association, because the collective bargaining agreement has essentially been, it still exists, but it's kind of been torpedoed at this point, or at least heavily sidelined. They still kind of have to negotiate a lot of this stuff anew.
Yeah, there's nothing in the CBA about, you can only have three family members with you. They have to the slightly new circumstances for clauses like that. I think in terms of what we know now, and supposedly this week there are going to be a lot more details forthcoming on what the actual safety procedures and the procedures if someone tests positive, etc., are going to be. I think they did a reasonable job. I mean, the fact that they're going to test everyone every day, I mean, that to me was the number one thing that they just had to do.
Once that came out, I felt better. I felt better about what they were doing. Once that came out, and once it became clear that the players weren't going to be able to leave the bubble and just like go out to a bar and then come back.
Now, there's, and I think also I applaud them if in fact this is what ends up happening. This report's indicated that you're not going to have family members joining until the last two rounds of the playoffs, when you've got a much smaller group of people. And then even then, it's only going to be three family members. I mean, that I'm sure was very difficult to get done. And I think I laud the players and the league and the teams, all of them, for taking this seriously. I mean, I think, you know, we'll see, obviously, we've seen this in many other businesses where, okay, you have these procedures and they look good on paper, but can you actually implement them? But it does seem like they are putting everything in place that they can. I mean, if you're going to say that, hey, we are going to do this, I'm not sure what else they realistically could do other than just not having any families for the entire time.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure what else they realistically could do to make this much safer within the parameters of a 22 team.
Exactly. Exactly. Situation. The way to make it safer than the way they've done it would be, because I think they've already pared down the team parties to about as low as they can go. They're going to leave the two-way players at home, which I think is the right move. We can talk about that in a little bit. The only thing they really could have done is pared down the number of teams. Like, I still think there's no reason at all for the Wizards and Suns to be there, but...
Oh, the Blazers agree with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Interesting, though, the Blazers not in favor of a 17 team.
Right. Imagine that.
Yeah, yeah. For those who don't know, by the way, the Blazers were the one team that voted no to this format, thinking that they could have done something more imaginative with a 20-team group. Maybe that would have been the group stage thing for the first round, but that ostensibly is why they voted no.
Yeah, exactly. And so for me, the one thing I thought maybe they should have done, again, to minimize the overall risk to the entire thing, is to bring back 16 teams and try to get it down to 8 as quickly as possible. And I know some people in the league were in favor of this as well, and not necessarily just teams that would have been self-interested by this particular setup, but that it was the way to minimize the risks to the overall pie, because you can get down to 8 much more quickly. And then when you go from 22 to 8, if you're talking about people interacting, especially, it's almost an exponential function then of how much you minimize the risk of a real contagion that jeopardizes the season.
Yeah, I think if you were going to have any sort of a regular season, that I understand why they brought more teams in. Number one, just to make a little more money, and number two, just to make the regular season feel like it is something. You know, I think that was something that was difficult to do. If you were going to have 16 teams, you don't want to go directly into the playoffs, and so you just to say, oh well, we're going to play these games, but it's just for seeding within these 8 teams already. Now, you know, a team like Milwaukee probably has absolutely nothing to play for at all. I mean, they still kind of have nothing to play for, but the rest of the teams at the bottom trying to get in, it seems like they're at least made this regular season mean something, especially with the playoff game of getting within, if you get within 4 games, you get to have the play-in.
Yeah, yeah. Were you a little surprised they didn't schedule the teams? Like, they still haven't said exactly what they're going to do with the schedule, but it seems like, at least what was leaked out, I think it was Vincent Goodwill from Yahoo had this first, that they're going to have teams play essentially what were the next 8 games on their schedule, and they'll just, you know, hack it a little bit to make sure everybody gets to 8, because obviously if you had the Hawks or Bulls or whoever, you can't play that game. But I was a little surprised that they didn't have teams play kind of pods where they're just playing each other, because again, that minimizes your transmission risk. If there's a case and you have a group of teams that are just playing each other, it never leaves that pod.
Well, so if they're playing every other day, we're going to have a few back-to-backs, and they're testing every day. I mean, the hope is, and people listen to my COVID pod will know this, but maybe more NBA-focused people don't know this, that when you have a new infection, basically your odds of getting that infection for the first 2 or 3 days with a test, your chances of testing positive are about nothing over the first couple of days after you've gotten infected. That makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. The virus is just starting to replicate in your body. There aren't copies of the virus that you can easily pick up with this testing. And then as you get into 3 days, 4 days, you're probably around a 50% chance of picking up an infection. Your false negative rates on tests are also a concern. Hopefully you can get that up higher than it's been nationwide. It's been about 30% false negative rate, which is a big problem, but you can help fix that by testing every day. But you do have this period where people in the 4 to 5 day range can be transmitting the virus, and there's not as much of a chance of getting the infection. So you do have a concern with that. But when you're still testing every single person every day, the hope is that you're going to start to realize that you have a problem. You only would have maybe a day or two of transmission that would occur before you're actually detecting that there's an issue. And so if you've got games spaced out where you're only playing 2 games in 4 days, hopefully there's only really two teams, and then they may have played one other team that you might transmit it to during that time. So I don't, as long if you're playing every day, then I think that becomes more of a concern of just like spreading it willy-nilly through the whole league. But I'm not that concerned about that if you're only playing, you know, two games over a course of 5 days, you know, that's probably about what it would be the most you're gonna be playing.
Yeah it seems like they're gonna, to me it seems like, because they need to think about how they're gonna schedule this, because they basically have this set up, it looks like, for a team that played seven games every series, where they would play literally like 36 games in 76 games in 76 days or something like that. Like it is basically in every other format, where there may be a back-to-back or two in the quote-unquote regular season part, but I think we're going to have back-to-backs in the playoffs, because I think they can be scheduled out more easily. Like if the play-in tournament goes shorter than expected, or if first-round series goes shorter than expected, then you can tweak the schedule in the second round, let's say, to eliminate back-to-backs that were in the original draft version of it, where you have to plan for everything going the maximum number of games.
Yeah, that makes sense, right? So what you're saying is, if all of the maximum number of games were played, the play-in, first round, second round, third round, then you might need a couple of back-to-backs, but realistically that hopefully doesn't happen, and so you can get rid of those as you go on.
Yeah. Now, I have a question for you, because I know you've studied this issue much more closely than I have, but I think teams are also a little worried about false positives, especially to a star player that could potentially take a guy out for a game or something for no reason at all. What's your perception of the false positive rate and how that might impact things?
Yeah, it's pretty low for most of these tests. You know, it should be below 5%. And so clearly anyone who tests positive, they're immediately going to test them again.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So that, and they'll have, I mean, they have plenty of tests on hand here. So, you know, okay. They might even test someone three times just to be sure over like a day or two period. And
yeah.
So I'm not that concerned about false positive. I mean, you might get a scare, but then I think you retest again enough times and they get their results back quickly.
With the number of people they're testing, they're going to have what, 20 false positives every single day?
Yeah, hopefully not quite that high. But yeah, I mean, if it is in like, you know, the 2% range or something like that, it shouldn't be as high as 5%.
Okay.
Also because they're going to get the operation going here too, in a way where this isn't just one person driving up to a drive-in clinic in New Jersey and getting a swab stuck up their nose by someone who's like not necessarily just started doing this work. You know, they've got people who, everyone's going to know the drill on how to do this. They're also going to have saliva tests, so that won't be as reliant on or like the lower end nasal swab, you won't be reliant on like sticking the thing 6 inches up the guy's nose and like doing that correctly. So I'm not as worried about that, but I think to the extent that problem exists, they'll immediately retest those people, and then you drive the number down very in terms
of you would think, especially if it was a relatively low percentage. Like, if, to your point, if it was a 1% false positive rate, you have 770 people there. If 22 teams bring 35 people, I think I did the math right. So you'll end up with 7 or 8 positive. But then if those are 1% to test positive again, then you're only going to end up with like once every 2 weeks, somebody being a false positive back to back.
Right. Another thing I'm a little concerned about is just especially with reopening, with people going to protests, which certainly is their right. I'm not criticizing that, but you could have, part of the idea of this was that you could be pretty sure that people weren't coming in, that many people who were COVID positive coming in. But it seems like just in this last week and a half, and then time beyond that, you know, I've seen some players at protests not wearing masks, for example. You could have people coming in more than might have been expected now, just starting off with positives, and so they'll have to come up with a protocol for that. I mean, the idea is that they're going to have to quarantine for 7 days, maybe as much as, or I should say self-isolate if they've already tested positive, up until, for 7 days, maybe as much as 14 days afterwards. And that's usually about where you're not going to be contagious anymore. And obviously if they're symptomatic, they're not going to be around their teammates either. But that's another thing to look out for as we start here, that we're probably not going to see, you know, I mean, teams that had generally tested their players, but we could see people getting infected here in the next couple of weeks. So let's on safety, I gave the league, I think, a 7 out of 10 when I graded them. What would your thoughts
be? That's probably about right, like a B. Like, I still think they're kind of slapping some stuff together, especially like some of the things about the coaches and what are they going to do about older coaches. And that, you know, that seemed like they were very much winging it a little bit. And
but quickly, that's older coaches who are more at risk being over 65. Adam Silver said that there might be some limitations placed on them. Then he walked that back, so they still haven't figured that.
Yeah, we haven't heard anything about the media side and just what other people will be in the building. Obviously, there's going to have to be referees, game operations staff.
I could tell you one thing about that. I won't be there.
Right.
I will not be quarantined there for 3 months in the bubble and spending a ton of money to do it. I think I could tell you that much.
Yeah. So it's going to be, I do think there will be media there. I think it will be a small contingent, but that's going to be an interesting part of it. I mean, and not just like people who write for the internet like me, but I mean, there obviously has to be some TV component to this as well. And figuring out how they do all that. Will they have remote announcers? Like there's a lot to address here. My colleague at The Athletic, Seth Partnow, you know, he brought up the fact that in addition to all the stuff about COVID-19, there's just this entire other litany of issues to deal with just in terms of putting on games for 22 teams in a completely different location. Like, it's a massive logistical challenge, and they have to sort through all this too. Just how are they going to put the games on? And there's a whole operations manual from the league. I don't know if you've ever seen the ops manual.
I have, yeah.
It runs hundreds of pages, and that's really where you get into the nitty gritty of, you know, how the clock operator is supposed to do everything and some of the other arcana of how a game is put on. And you just wonder, I think it's going to be really interesting to see the league try to put this all together so quickly in this new environment with all the logistics.
Yeah, hopefully they'll have the ability to kind of practice all this as everyone is in Orlando doing training camp, waiting out the quarantine period in Florida. So I'm really excited to let you know that Helix Sleep is joining Hollinger and Duncan as a sponsor. They've actually been a sponsor of Dunkdown. I've had a Helix Sleep mattress for over 5 years now. I found them with some research that my wife did. We tried a mattress delivery company that was one size fits all. We hated it. We had to return that one. She found Helix Sleep, and I loved it so much that I actually DM'd their company Twitter account and asked them to sponsor the show. Now they're joining us on Hollinger and Duncan as well. But sounds like it is just in time for you. Since how old were you saying your mattress was?
we were trying to figure this out. I mean, we've been married for close to 20 years now, and I think we've had the same mattress for most of it. I mean, we couldn't place exactly when we got our mattress, but it was definitely more than a decade ago. So it's just one of those things you don't even think about, right? You go to bed every night, and then you it's time, and I'm super excited because I think this will be much more comfortable than what I have now, from everything I've read, from the customer reviews, from what you've told me about your experience. So exciting times here.
Yeah, the way you get started with them, if you go to helixsleep.com/PER, easy to remember, /PER, because John invented PER, you can take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and then they can match you to a customized mattress that is going to give you the best sleep of your life. I know whenever I go stay somewhere else, I'm always happy to get back to my Helix Sleep mattress. And right now they are offering up to $200 off all mattress orders. That's up to $200 off at helixsleep.com/PER. Don't forget that /PER URL and let them know that you came from us. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, the storefront auto parts store just isn't as good of an experience as it used to be. It's impossible to stock all the parts you need right there in a traditional chain storefront. We've had that experience where you go up to the counter, man, you tell him what you need. He says, we don't have it in stock, but I can order it from you. And then he goes in to the exact same interface that you'd be using on the website to order it. And it's like, why did I come down here? And now I have to go back to the store to pick it up as well. So why not just save time and go to rockauto.com instead? If you're the type of person who likes to work on their cars, or you want to start working on your cars, rockauto.com Auto.com is the best place to do it. Their prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. They don't have these different price tiers for professional mechanics compared to do-it-yourselfers. They always offer the lowest prices possible instead of changing prices based on what the market will bear, like airlines do. You don't have to have a membership. You don't have to have an account created. You can just go to rockauto.com and buy the part that you need. They're a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. You can shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers, quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle, and choose the brand specifications and the prices that you prefer. There's no reason to spend up to twice as much for the same parts. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Make sure that you write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know that you came from us. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. So how about just in terms of fairness, when you like, when I say that, I've just, however you want to define that, with this yeah. is actually going to pick the teams that need to get into the playoffs, that deserve to be in the playoffs, pick a deserving champion, etc.
I think from a fairness perspective, this was about as well as they could have done. I'll give them an A minus or a B plus. I don't think the Wizards or Suns have any business being here, but
yeah, but they also have no chance. Well, the Wizards, I don't have
the
no
Wizards
chance.
Actually yeah. were probably given too much of a chance. Now
I agree,
the Wizards yeah. because they're the Wizards probably can't play 8 games against playoff caliber teams and win more than 3 of them, so at that point they probably will be eliminated. Where it's impossible to be fair is on the remaining schedules, because you can't give some of these teams the easy games they had remaining on their schedule. When you compare the schedules of like New Orleans and Memphis, for instance, that was one of the things people pointed to, right? And that's just impossible to replicate now, and it's impossible to give teams enough games to in the West to catch Memphis, for instance. But I think the what they ended up with is relatively fair. I mean, if Memphis beats these other teams by a game or more over these 8 games, there won't be a play-in in the Western Conference. They'll get it outright. So I thought that 4 game rule was a pretty good improv by the league to allow teams that earned that 8 spot to not have to play for it.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. And it also seems too that just doing the next 8 games, I mean, maybe that's not the fairest. You could have said, okay, well, if Memphis has a much harder schedule, we're going to manufacture their schedule so it's mm-hmm. X amount harder compared to New Orleans. But you don't know what the teams they would have been playing would have been like, and whether they would have had injuries and whether they would have been trying. And so this yeah. at least is just like, hey, we're going to play the next 8 games. It also kind of gives you a little bit of cover of like, no, we are really finishing the regular season. These are regular season games, you know, when you're going to the RSNs to try to get paid. And it just, hey, you're playing the next 8 games that were on the schedule is probably the hardest thing to argue with
yeah.
when you're trying to sell this to people.
Yeah, yeah. Because otherwise, if the league came up with a schedule on their own, everyone would instantly come up with conspiracy theories about how they were trying to get this team or that team into the playoffs, or put the Lakers on TV against this team. So it takes all that out of play. So I think it was pretty smart from that aspect.
What about entertainment? How would you grade this in terms of just how entertaining it's going to be, how interesting it's going to be?
I do think it will be interesting. It is, from an entertainment factor, I do think it's good to have some buildup before we get into the playoffs. And so these 8 games will give us that. It'll kind of recalibrate everyone, get us familiar with who all the players are and whatnot. And we'll have some seeding battles, especially in the Western Conference. That'll keep some interest. We'll see if we have a play-in tournament, which... The more I think about it, I think the league is maybe a little too excited about it. I mean, it's going to be games between teams that people don't really care that much about, and only a couple of them. Like, the more I think about it, I feel like the revenue potential of this is actually kind of limited. But I guess we'll see how it goes. We'll see if we have playing games at all, actually.
I would have liked to see something a little bit more extensive and involving more team for that.
For the playing, would you have liked to see like 7 through 10 play for it, or
yeah, something? Something along those lines where there's just a little bit sexier than, hey, you got to get within 4 games and then the 9th seed has to win twice as opposed to once for the 8th seed. I think I guess I don't really care as much about like, oh, this team was ahead in the regular season, you should preserve that.
Yeah.
I would rather it just be more entertaining, more teams involved, seem like it means more. That'd be my personal preference, and that wouldn't necessarily involve more teams or negatively impact safety, but I understand why they did it the way they needed to do it, because the closer you were to what it used to be, while still giving these teams at least a patina of a chance going forward, like that was going to get the most buy-in, even if it wasn't going to be the most awesome.
Yeah, I agree. And we'll see, I guess, if they try to build this out in subsequent seasons to become something more. Although it's going to be a challenge in future years, too, because it's extra days on the schedule and they don't really have them now, right? I mean, they're trying to kind of accordion the schedule back into the former dates that it had. And it's going to be really hard over the next 2 years to do that.
This is, we'll have plenty of time to talk about what it's going to look like. I was kind of preparing my wife for the idea that I was basically going to have, once this starts, I'm going to have no break until like August of 2021.
Yes, that like, I had that conversation as well. Yes.
But it's interesting. I mean, once this starts in Orlando, this 2 months is going to be like the most intense basketball experience we've ever had. We're going to have all these games between teams that are actually good, that and games that mean something. Every game is probably going to mean something, at least at the beginning of it.
Yeah.
And they're going to be starting at like noon and going until like 9 p.m. Pacific time. And it's going to be like, it's going to be crazy. There's going to just be like so much to keep track of, so much to do. The games are just going to keep coming. There aren't going to be any breaks. I mean, this is going to be like, just to cover it, it's going to be incredibly intense.
It's going to be pretty intense until probably the middle of the second round. Yeah.
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 I mean, that's usually what it is for me anyway, but this is going to be like, because that first month when you've got multiple games, first month of playoffs, we've got multiple games per day, every day, sometimes as many as four. That's what I'm just like, okay, I'm tell my wife I'm just not going to see her for a month, but this is going to be like 2 months of that, bro.
Probably. Although, the number of games per day might not be that crazy in this regular season part. I think it's probably going to be 5 to 6 a day.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I'm going to be so eager to see all of them. And
exactly. I mean, because you will never be more excited for a Suns Wizards game than August 1st.
And I mean, it's because usually one of my most intense viewing times of the year is the beginning of the season. So I'm like, oh, how do all these teams look? Who's got bounce? Who looks like they're struggling? Who came in shape? Who's got the chemistry? And, you got to like get all this new information. We're going to go from that period and then immediately into the playoffs. And all these games are going to matter too. It's going to be awesome, actually. I mean, I might not sleep a lot, but it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. And then drafting free agency right after that, baby.
What did you think about the league saying they want to start the next season on December 1st?
I don't really think that's going to happen, but I was surprised. Yeah, I guess
NBA Finals Game 7 is October 12th. Draft is going to be the 15th.
I understand why they did it, because I think the idea is that's what allows them to have the season ended and have all the players play in the Olympics.
Yeah.
If you're done by July, 20-something, then they just get on a plane to Tokyo and play in the Olympics.
Perhaps more importantly, to not have the NBA Finals going up against the Olympics. I think probably more important than actually having the players play in the Olympics. I mean, I think that's nice, but this isn't 1992. Like, you have to, this isn't going to be like some huge worldwide thing. I mean, I'm sure the players would like to play, but I think it's more about just not having the finals up against the Olympics.
That's a great point that I somehow had not considered.
Anything else you want to talk about with the restart here?
I do think they're going to be able to claw back a fair amount of money from this, which is probably the one good thing, by getting games for the regional sports networks, by having 22 teams play times 8. They'll get some national TV games out of it, I'm sure, for their national partners. And then they'll have full best of 7 in the playoffs, which is historically when they've always done the best on TV anyway. So they're not going to have the revenue coming in from the crowds, which is unfortunate, is going to be an issue as they negotiate the salary cap for next year. But they probably stemmed a lot of bleeding if they can pull this off and get it completed without any outbreaks that forces them to shut down.
So here's something I wanted to run by. I talked about this with Danny the other day. What effect is no home court advantage going to have on these playoffs? Assuming there is no home court, I mean, they might like pipe some crowd noise in some fashion. I don't know if that would actually make a difference, but assuming there's no home court advantage, advantage.
Which there shouldn't be. They've also talked about having teams have their floors shipped there so that they could, you know, it could be like the Staples Center floor when the Lakers are quote unquote home. So it'd be like, you know, you go to Staples for Lakers at Clippers, you know, it would be like that, I guess.
Yeah. So if they do that, I never want to hear about the owners crying poor ever again. It just seems like a colossal waste of money to do that. I mean, maybe it doesn't cost that much in the grand scheme of things, who knows, but
I think that's going to be really interesting. There's no travel, obviously, which is one of the factors in home court. All the players are staying in hotels. Nobody's sleeping in their quote unquote own bed, so to speak. It should produce, I would think, it should produce fewer fluctuations in a series. Like,
yeah,
you see series sometimes where the first two games are completely lopsided the one way and then the next two are completely lopsided the other way. And I think there's going to be a lot less of that. But I don't know. I guess I just don't know. I'm really interested. I'm interested to see what it does to like foul shooting and I don't know. I think there's a lot of interesting issues with this. The other thing is they've talked about introducing some hacks to like give a team home court advantage, even though it's not their home court, like whether it's an extra timeout or I don't know.
I really hope they don't do that. I always felt that home court advantage, it was important maybe to make the regular season mean something, and just the nature of basketball with the number of games economically, you couldn't do it at a neutral site. Yeah. All the time, you just weren't going to get people traveling for seven game series at a neutral site. But I mean, I never really cared for it. I always felt like it should be, each game should be as fair as possible. I didn't really like the idea that, you know, oh, this team is playing at home, and so either because they're, you know, that's like subtly influencing the refs somehow. So this is my theory, that if the road team can extend it to a seventh game, mm-hmm. they will have the advantage and not have to play a game seven on the road where the win percentage is like 70% for the home team. But before that, I think it'll actually favor the better team, because over the first six games of a series, you would have, you know, there isn't a home court advantage over the first six games of the series. And then you're not going to have this thing where the better team wins the first two games and then the home or then the worst team comes out and they got the crowd behind them and it's their last stand and they win game three. I think it's going to kind of be like, all right, if one team goes up 2-0 and they're the better team anyway, there's no rallying cry of, oh, we're going home, like we can, the whole series is going to change, there's nothing psychologically to change the series, there's no crowd to buoy you. And so I think we might see more sweeps, especially too when you have everybody being fresh. I think that generally favors whatever team is the better team. So that's my theory. But if you do get to a game seven, then obviously that advantage flips to the road team relative to what we're used to.
That's interesting. I do think there are series that go six or seven, especially because the road team is able to get just enough of a boost to win games three, four, and six by 1 point each. But like, we've definitely seen that, even though they were totally outclassed. I mean, like the classic one was here in Atlanta with the year the Celtics won the championship, and the, you know, the games in Boston in that first round against Atlanta, Boston won by like 35, 43, and 108. And Atlanta won by like 1, 2, and 3. So you won't have that kind of series. So that will take away something from the quote unquote road team's ability to extend the series. But I think where the road team is close in talent, they will have an actual better chance of winning the series.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. I think that dovetails nicely with what I was saying. The concept of a protein bar is great. When you're feeling hungry, you eat it. Protein fills you up much more than other types of food. You can have it to build muscle after your workout, try to reduce your appetite if you're trying to lose weight. That all sounds great. Unfortunately, until now, it didn't taste great. It tasted like chalk or cement or some other substances that are analogous to crushed rock. But Built Bar has changed that. It is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. 16 amazing flavors, 8 chocolate and nut flavors, 8 chocolate and nut-free flavor. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They are soft and easy to chew, but they are still low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. Their peanut butter brownie, for example, 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, 3 grams of net carbs. The way to get started with them is at builtbar.com and use that promo code LOCKEDON. Easy to remember, so we have that as the name of our network, LOCKEDON. Locked On, and you'll get $10 off your first order. That's promo code Locked On for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Don't forget to use that promo code Locked On to let them know that you came from us. Are you going to talk about, as you so glibly referred to them in your column, as the Delete Eight?
Yeah, yeah. The eight teams that were not invited to this little festival. What do they get? What do they do now? And what will the league allow them to do? Again, they're completely inventing this on the fly. I think a lot of these teams want to have some kind of organized basketball activities, want to have some kind of games or, you know, modified summer league or something to get these guys back in the gym and not have them just hanging out for 9 months before they come back in December. And this is another huge logistical question for the league of how do you do this? Can you bring these other eight teams in? Does it make sense to bring them to Orlando also? Or are you increasing the risk to your to the 22 teams that you care about? So is that a bad idea? Should they have them meet up someplace else and play in a little eight-team summer league, which would be kind of like the old, like, it would be like the Utah Summer League or something, right? It would be just be, or the old Orlando League, and just have that. This is uncharted territory. The other thing I think they haven't really figured out is, well, if the other 22 teams are allowed to sign players, what about these eight teams? You know, can they convert their two-way guys now, even though their season is technically over? Because they probably would have done that if the season had kept going.
Yeah, they clearly should be allowed to. That one, that discrete issue seems like a pretty simple solution to me, that you should at least have like a little transactional period that mirrors the end of the season.
Yeah, you would hope that the league would give them that. And then these, it's such an interesting scenario for these teams because I think individually they're all in different places too. Like the Hawks really wanted to play. The Warriors, I think, were completely fine with just showing up in December, right? For the most part. Maybe they wanted their young guys to get some run. But and I think that some of the teams in between were kind of all over the place on this. So how do you devise something that meets the different things that these teams want to do, but can you provide some way for them to play games? And then can they bring these games to their regional sports networks and make some money off of that too? I think there's a lot of questions here with those eight teams, and we haven't really heard a lot of answers from them. And I don't think it's a topic that a lot of people care that much about, but I think it's an important one for the league to think about, and for these eight teams to kind of do right by them and make sure they're not just screwing them for the start of next season where they just have a bunch of out of shape guys showing up.
So a couple of things here that come to mind. I mean, number one, I think the idea of teams actually playing each other, assuming that the transmission is at the level that it is now, that seems just absolute insanity to me. As you noted, there aren't that many people that care about this. And so to have to go, I mean, we've seen what the league has had to go through with testing every day, and they're going to have this bubble and quarantining, and they have a neutral site. I mean, there's no way it's worth it from a safety standpoint, from a money standpoint, to do that for a bunch of teams that aren't going to be playing games that matter. Like, there's just no way to me. Now, if you want to say you're going to do that and have like a mini camp among the players on one team, maybe each team could scrimmage another team and have it be like one other team and play like a two-game series and have it, you know, you could televise it just because why not? But like anything beyond that to me just seems like a logistical nightmare, a safety nightmare. And here, you know, this is creating an NBA champion. It's salvaging a season. It's saving hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars for the league. This, just to have these teams play each other seems just like way, way dumb to me in terms of the safety risk
and
the logistics.
Logistics.
That's one thing. I got other thoughts, but what do you think of that?
No, the logistics are really hard because that Orlando property is so unique, because that can be kind of hermetically sealed, and there are basketball gyms, and there are hotels, and there are places to eat. And there is a huge staff familiar with the service industry that happens to be there and doesn't have a lot to do right now. So where else are you finding that? What are you going to send them to France and have them play at Disney World Paris or something? You know, like there's just not many places that check those boxes. So what can you do with these other eight teams, I think, is a great question. I think at the very least, they're going to really push to have mini camps of their own where they can scrimmage and possibly scrimmage against another team at some point.
Yeah, and you'd have to have a ton of testing. testing for that. There's also been talk that maybe these teams would have the ability to open up their training camp a little earlier. That seems reasonable to me. Here's the other thing, though. For this mini camp, who's in it? I mean, these teams, their season is over. Mm-hmm. Free agents to be on this team, like Mo Harkless or Tristan Thompson.
I do not expect Vince Carter to show up at Atlanta's minicamp. Right? Yeah. That would be an upset.
Yeah, and also, if you're about to be a free agent, like, you don't want to expose yourself to potential injury or COVID-19 with this.
Yeah.
So is it just going to be the players who are under contract for next year, but it's still going to be this season, and then after you sign everybody, then you come in for a training camp afterwards as well at the start of next season? I guess that's how you'd have to do it, that anyone who's about to be a free agent, maybe they would make it voluntary for them as opposed to mandatory. Maybe that would be the way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way. Most of these teams don't have a lot of free agents, but there are definitely some. Like, Detroit would have like half a team. They'd probably be the most impacted.
Yeah, if you're Christian Wood and you're about to get paid and you've made the minimum salary for your career,
hey, he already had it though. He's probably fine.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, no, that's actually, I'd forgotten about that. But it's someone in the same situation as
sure,
him.
Sure.
You don't. Well, even Christian Wood, he might not. He just probably doesn't want to risk injury at this point.
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely
conventional normal injury, especially coming back from this when you're about to get paid. So, I mean, are there any of these teams that you think are really, these eight teams that are really burned by not getting a chance to play until next year?
It's just tough to say. You don't. I mean, what is the impact of these guys not playing for that long? I mean, I guess we sort of saw it in 2011 or 1998. I mean, it wasn't great, you know. But you raise an interesting point with them, because they could come back early because they hadn't been playing for so long. The only way they would get burned is if they had acquired players from other teams that had just finished. But maybe then those players don't have to show up. So there probably is a workable solution there. I still think at the end of it all, these teams definitely are going to want to have mini camps for their young guys, because they're basically all in some stage of rebuilding, all eight of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Hawks, especially with Reddish starting to play well, that's a team that I totally understand why they wanted to get back and play. Now, by the way, we haven't talked about the lottery odds are going to remain the same as they were as of March 11th.
Yes.
Even for teams that play in the seeding tournament and don't make it, then they still, you just use their March 11th record. So there's no disincentive to win for, say, a team like Washington. Like, if they'd gone 0-8, they could have actually improved their odds.
Yeah.
So thankfully, that's not going to happen.
And if, on the other hand, if Washington passes a couple of these Western Conference teams in the standings, it won't count and they'll stay at ninth, unless they also want to play in game.
Trying to think if there are any other teams that really stick out to me as teams that are hurt by not being able to finish out the season. I think Chicago might be one, actually.
I mean Coby White was going gangbusters toward the end.
Yeah, Otto Porter was finally back. He was looking okay. Markkanen had just missed a bunch of time. He was coming back. Carter had missed a bunch of time. Like, they actually, I think Markkanen now is coming in for an extension. Now, you could say the Bulls were helped by the fact that they're able to bring in a new front office more quickly.
Yeah. And presumably a head coach.
Presumably, yeah. And knowing that their season is over now, I mean, that makes the optics a little harder of this. Oh, we're evaluating Jim Boylan while he's not coaching games, and then we're going to bring someone else in.
Yeah. We're evaluating while somebody else is already rumored to be the favorite for the job. That's a little awkward.
Oh, I know what I wanted to talk to you about.
Sure.
What do you think about Tibbs in New York? He's rumored to be the front runner.
I do think he should. It didn't go well in Minnesota, but I think his record up to that point was strong enough that I do think he's worthy of being hired. Certainly, just much better fit on a veteran team. Like, I mean, that's what he's about, right? He's not there to develop young guys. He's gonna try to coach up the defense, lean on his veterans, and get as much out of them as he can. So if you know that going in, then I don't think he makes sense for this particular team, because I mean, are the Knicks gonna be be in win now mode next year? I don't see any chance of that.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I disagree with you a little bit too on the fact that I think he deserves another chance. I've generally gone more towards the, hey, take each opportunity that you have to hire a coach as a chance to find the next great coach. And I think based on how it went for him in Minnesota with the defense, the whole selling point is this guy is going to coach your defense up to like crazy good levels no matter what your personnel is. And that wore off in Minnesota. He's clearly not a progressive offensive coach. He's not progressive in terms of the types of lineups that he likes to play. And so I'm not sure what the selling point is, because it seemed like he was, even in Chicago, he's really kind of a one-trick pony as far as just being this incredible defensive taskmaster. And also the league kind of caught up with some of his strategic innovations too. And maybe even more so than that, the strong side zone stuff that he started doing back with the Celtics. But because everyone does that now, so he doesn't have any kind of new strategic innovations. But to me, I would rather proceed with Mike Miller in New York than with Tom Thibodeau. Maybe that puts me in the minority, but Mike Miller, I thought, did a pretty decent job. I think there's a better chance, not a high one, but still a better chance that Mike Miller is a really, really good NBA coach than that Tom Thibodeau is, in particular for this roster.
I do think Mike Miller earned himself quite a few fans with what he did with the Knicks and what he had done. I mean, people who watched the G League thought he had done a good job in Westchester too. So I can't dispute that part of it. The other name I think you have to wonder about for New York with a developing team would be Kenny Atkinson and his track record in player development.
Yeah, I think they just can't deal with the optics of bringing in the guy that's just fired, right, which is ridiculous. But they kind of seem to have this pretty petty rivalry. And of course, I mean, you also worry about the nepotism aspect of the CAA connections with Thibodeau and Leon Rose, and that it's just like there haven't been reports of them interviewing anybody.
Yeah.
It just seems like, we're going to come in and this is who we're going to hire.
Yeah. And that, I mean, CAA has run the Knicks for a long time. So now it's at least in the open.
Well, the one thing that you might argue is that for whatever reason, a lot of stars actually seem to think that Tom, like, really respect Tom Thibodeau, and he is relationships with some of them from Team USA, and so maybe that's a thought, is that you're now more attractive to stars.
He can be your recruiter in 21, which is the big free agent market for those who don't know. There's this one upcoming is not very impressive. The one in 21 is really good.
Yeah, if you'd like to hear how unimpressive it is, we did a whole podcast on that 2 weeks ago. Exactly. Go back and listen. It's awesome. Really, these guys are going to transform your team. Get excited about it. Yeah, that was really seemed like he's just like such a retread at this point. And maybe the thought is, well, he'll do better if he's not the chief decision maker. If he doesn't have Tom Thibodeau getting him the players, then maybe he can do better.
That's usually the case. I mean, I'm not saying for him. I'm saying for most coaches.
Yeah.
The act of coaching makes you worse at being a GM.
What else we got to talk about here?
We should talk about rosters. What's fair? What can the league do? What should they do?
You're talking about going for the teams that are in Orlando?
Yeah. There's been a lot of talk about adding players or giving teams the ability to add players, sign new players, replace injured players, whether they should bring their two-way guys down or not. Here's my take on it. So they're going to play 8 games, right? And, you know, they might use a little more of their bench in these 8 games, especially in the first couple. Once we get to the playoffs, all these whoever gets signed between now and when the playoffs start, not one of these dudes is playing any meaningful time in the playoffs. Like, it's an irrelevant conversation to me. All you're doing is bringing in people who add to your risk pool.
Well, the concern is either that there's going to be some huge rate of injuries as people try to ramp up because they weren't able to train, or that you could have people who aren't able to play due to infection. And I think it's just to basically be like, we're not in a situation where a team only has 7 guys. Clearly, I mean, what I'm kind of envisioning as I think about it more is whatever team it was that had that happen is going to lose the series anyway, probably, or not make it in. But you don't want to be in a situation where that team, from an octave standpoint, just doesn't even have enough healthy players to play. And so you want to at least be like, okay, we can put these guys out there in the jersey and it doesn't completely disrupt thing. And yeah, they're going to lose, but at least we can say they lost. Right. And, you know, this wasn't, we got past it. It's not as much of a PR disaster. That's I mean, I'm just thinking about that off the top of my head now, but that's kind of like what this is about, more than just like, oh yeah, we need to sign a rotation piece out of the G League here for the playoff.
Yeah, yeah. And to me, the first step in that is make the two-way guys eligible. But I mean, I also think about just leave the two-way guys home and just cut. I mean, they're talking about just bringing 35 people per team. Obviously, one of the ways you do that is not bring 17 players, bring 15 instead.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't anticipate, hopefully, if you've got enough, a big enough outbreak on a team that those guys are going to start mattering, someone that you're able to sign and to have like you need to have the roster be that big to make it through, they got bigger problems than just that one team, I'm guessing, at that point.
So then are you in favor of expanding rosters or...
I must have articulated that well. It seems like it doesn't really matter that much. If you want to do it just so everyone feels better, fine.
But yeah. I feel like that's really... where they're doing it, but I feel like they're adding to their risk by doing it, I guess. So that's why I'm a little skeptical. But I see your points. Teams are going to worry about running out of players if they have players test positive, which is a fair counterpoint.
Yeah, and it makes it look like you're doing something to lower everyone's anxiety level, even if it doesn't actually work out to help when you actually get into it. Do you think that there's been talk that even though this is going to be happening in July, you've got players overseas, like the EuroLeague is not finishing out their season. Mm-hmm. A lot of leagues aren't finishing out their season. Those players are technically going to be free agents. Do you agree with the decision that you can't sign those players?
I thought that was really interesting because they didn't have to do that. And I wonder if that was a measure to kind of protect the guys within the Players Association, to kind of protect the fraternity of the American players a little bit. In their negotiations with them, because they didn't have to make that decision, and it didn't seem like there was a huge competitive reason to make it. There could have been issues just with getting letters of clearance from some of these teams, and then having to quarantine guys who come in from overseas could add some additional problems, I guess. But I thought that was a really interesting wrinkle when I saw that, because it didn't seem like hugely germane to the overall picture here, and yet somebody clearly wanted that. And so my guess is that it was the Players Association trying to protect the guys who were in the league this season.
I think I agree with that. I also think that that's something that happens next season, is when you bring over the guys whose contracts expired last season. And so you could, there are players who could actually fundamentally change things for some of these teams. And so
did we do a podcast about that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So that's just not a, and it's just, it's easier from a logistical standpoint of like, okay, these guys come over this season, their contract expires for this season, they shouldn't still be playing in what is technically the same season as when their contract expired. And so it would be a little odd. And I don't think the league wants this idea of like, okay, this mercenary is going to come over, be here for 2 months, and then just go right back to the same team again.
Could also be an unfair advantage to teams who like had money left on their mid-level exception, for instance.
Yeah, that's a great point. Absolutely. If you knew at the start of the year that there's going to be this bonanza of players who might be available 2 weeks before the season was over, teams would have probably tried to save their money more. So I think it's a good thing that they're not allowing that to happen. All right, what else we got here?
You know what we
got
to do? We haven't done it in 3 months.
You're gonna rule teams out of the playoffs?
Yeah, let's rule somebody out of the playoffs.
Man, this is impossible. We already have ruled out 13 teams each.
Mm-hmm.
So we've only got one more team.
Theoretically, although I think we're going to take the L on one of these first 13.
Memphis is looking a lot more sure now than they were at the time when the season ended. They were, some projection systems had them as less than 50%. And I mean, they would have to work hard to not be the eighth seed, even given the fact that they're going to have a tough schedule.
They'll probably hold number eight. And then they'll get two shots in a play-in game. So,
That's interesting. This is so we're each going to pick one. Is that what's going to happen here? You and I both last ruled out the Spurs. Mm-hmm. So who do we have left here? We've got basically New Orleans and Portland are the only two teams that we have left, other than teams that are like actually in playoff position now.
Yeah, I mean, we could rule out Orlando or Brooklyn, I guess, if we really believed in the Wizards.
Why do you waste my time?
hater.
Who knows, man? I mean, the Wizards could. I mean, John Wall's not going to play. KD's not going to play. Kyrie's not going to play. But it's. I mean, maybe some of these teams will just look totally different. You never know. I mean, it's going to be such a frenzy to try and figure that out early on. I mean, the first upset that happens, people are going to be like, "Oh my god! Like the sky is falling here. Everything has totally changed."
Yeah. Yeah.
So who, and I guess we don't know, you know what though? We don't even know what the schedule is yet.
We don't even know the schedule. I mean, that's nope, what we're flying that's, blind.
All right. I mean, this is your name comes first on the podcast. I'm going to listen to you.
I'm going to knock out the Pelicans. I'll give
so
you two.
You're a believer in Portland. Is that what the basis for that is?
So I don't really believe that much in Portland, but Portland has a couple of advantages. Okay. First of all, it looks like they'll have Yusuf Nurkic and Zach Collins, which, presumably, I mean, if they're smart means they won't be playing Carmelo Anthony and, you know, that they'll have a much better front court. Even if Nurkic can only play some minutes, it means your backup five is Nurkic. It's not like Caleb Swanigan or whoever. Second thing is that they have the advantage over New Orleans right now because they are by one teeny little percentage point ahead of the Pelicans in the standings, which means if they both go 4-4, for instance, and the same applies with Sacramento, actually, that Portland, by virtue of being 29-37 rather than 28-36, has a better winning percentage and would get the advantage for number nine. Third reason I'll take Portland is that with coming back like this from the long layoff, I do think there's a question of, with Zion Williamson in particular, of how they're going to be able to ramp him up, how safe they should be, what limitations will come up. And I think those considerations are still going to trump trying to get the number nine spot for the Pelicans.
Yeah, that's you make some compelling points there. Portland has done it before. They seem just the most invested in this too. They've got Damian Lillard, you know he's going to have stayed in great shape. And yeah, man, I don't like this at all, though. I mean, New Orleans tough, was right? going to be my favorite. Also, just something always seems to happen to New Orleans.
I probably had a little of that in the back of my head. That's just like something's going to happen.
Yeah. All right. I'll agree with you. I guess whoever the number nine seed is does not have a great opportunity here. So this should be our full field then. We technically are both now picking Portland to be the number eight seed because we ruled out Memphis back in December.
Yeah.
I think it was early December.
Yeah, that aged well.
But I really have no idea what it's going to look like. I'm sure we'll talk before things start on just what are some of the key questions we're going to be watching in that first week of things like Justice Winslow being back and Nurkic and oh man, I can't wait to actually watch basketball and like find out the answers to these questions again.
Yeah, it's gonna be pretty exciting. I'm even just watching like random games from February on tape, it's like, oh yeah, look at this. We're starved.
Even the jaded former executive. So on that note, actually, I had one question I wanted to ask you for Holland Journeys here. If you are watching when you were working for a team, if you watched a NBA game doing pro personnel scouting, what were you looking at? Like, what did your report look like when you came back? Presumably you have like a database of all these scouting reports. You're expected to write a report when you go, or if it's not you, you know, your pro personnel guy would do that. What is in that report? Like, what, I mean, is it bullet points? Are there like sections that you've put out ahead of time that the person has to fill out? Like, what does that document look like?
Yeah, I mean, every team has their own way of doing things, but we typically, I mean, I always feel like bullet points are a much easier form of communication for most people, like, especially if they're not, I don't know, if they weren't a writer before they worked in a front office, for instance.
Yes.
Like, it's just easier, and it gets everything across, and so you don't need to, you know, get into all the gobbledygook.
That's why I have a podcast now, actually, because I can just do my notes in bullet points instead of having to, like, actually write them. So
streamlined. So, you know, you're always trying to get some of the things that you can't get just off of watching tape, right? So, you're trying to see what the guy looks like. like before the game. You're trying to talk to people around the team and find out as much as you can about the guy. You know, do the teammates like him? Does he work hard? You know, is there some injury we don't know about? Just general information gathering, playing detective a little bit. And that way it's very similar to college scouting for the draft or the pro scouting you do in Europe, for instance. Generally, though, probably the one difference is the players we're watching on the NBA level, most of them are knowns. So, like when we're watching, I don't know, if we're watching the Bulls play the Wizards, first of all, some poor scout got sent to a Bulls Wizards game, but typically the guys you want your scout to tell you about are not Zach LaVine and Bradley Beal, because we already know about them, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you might be trading for that guy,
yeah,
then maybe
unless
you would,
there's
you would
a specific, unless
yeah.
There'll be times where it's like, no, we need you to watch this guy, but usually it's not like that, and so it's like, tell us about Adam Makoka, you know, tell us what you can about Admiral Schofield, right? Like that's what we're trying to find out mostly, is the guys we don't see every day and trying to find the diamonds in the rough there. That's a lot of it on the pro side, is really trying to find out about the guys who don't play.
So did you, when you were in Memphis, did you have like a form or a template that you wanted someone who watched
we went through a few different ones. Yeah. So, and it's funny because we basically had a template for college scouting that we just kind of hacked for pro, because I don't know, pro's a little different that way. That the film quality is really good. The number of games is so large, and your experience base with these players is so large.
Statistical record is way better.
Statistical record. So there's a lot more knowns. So a lot of times you'd start there. You'd start with the analytics and video study, and then the in-person stuff would almost come last. The exception is, again, with the guys we don't see. So in some ways, like a lot of teams scout summer league harder than they scout the actual games in the season, because that's when they see all the guys that they're curious about.
Yeah. I mean, I probably pay more attention to summer league games than an average NBA game, because I kind of know with a lot of the players already what the story is.
Yeah. So it's definitely that, like the pro scouting is definitely different because of that. And you're not trying to project ahead with most of these guys quite as much. You're trying to more describe what they are, not what they can be. Because again, they're already, you know, 25 or 30 or whatever. Whereas when you look at a 19-year-old, the more important question is, what can he be when he's 25?
So was there more of a feeling for the guys that you knew of just like, hey, if you see anything that really looks different to you, point it out?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, there was definitely that, like, hey, by the way, this guy lost 15 pounds. He looks great. He, you know, the what's different, I think, is really the thing you're asking about veteran players.
All right. Well, this is awesome. Let's get going here. What'd you write out for The Athletic this week before we go?
So for The Athletic this week, I wrote about the restart in the league and a lot of the questions that have come up in response to that, and where they can go from here. And then I teamed up with Jared Weiss to write about the Celtics and where they go from here, what they can do with Gordon Hayward's expiring deal, what their playoff matchups look like, and a lot of other questions about them. So you can find that on The Athletic.
All right, we will talk to y'all next time. Till then.